This is the podcast for December 23rd, 2011. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the John Boehner Mammoth Tax Cave National Park, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
And happy solstice.
Greetings. And
happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Hope everyone had a great Zapadan.
Mm-hmm. If anybody really actually does celebrate Kwanzaa, way to go. Happy Kwanzaa.
Happy Kwanzaa. Mm-hmm. We're glad. We're celebrating Christmas in this house, which means peeling the children off the ceiling every day. And they're all excited. And they're all past the Santa phase, but this year the girls volunteered at Breakfast with Santa to help the little kids, so that was nice.
Yeah. Even though they, you know, they know he sits on a throne of lies.
They know Santa sits on a throne of lies.
To quote Elf, the very fine movie with Will Ferrell now.
Yeah,
Elf,
that's very good.
Which is a hilarious
movie. That's really one of my favorites of the of the newer movies. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and as you know, one of my all-time favorite Christmas movies that nobody realizes is a Christmas movie is The Lion in Winter.
Yeah, and you were watching clips from that tonight. I think I'm going to have to run one of those. That was really good.
It's an awesome movie. If you haven't seen this movie, it is just full of, I could peel you like a grape and God himself would call it justice. You know, that's Katharine Hepburn delivering that line. It is just a friggin' awesome movie, start to finish. Yeah. Very modern in a lot of ways.
Her lines are all perfect. I mean, all the lines she has. Thank you so much for letting me out of jail. Yes, she's really, really good.
And they're just, and it's a very political movie. Mm-hmm. It's about how powerful people
fight each other
over fight for power, and how they enjoy it, and how they over the generations they just don't stop, and even though they have everything, they just can't give it up. And it has a wonderful cast, and it's awesome. Anyway,
so that's our recommendation for over the holidays is to watch The Lion in Winter.
Yes.
And we were trying to come up with some way to end the year and have some sort of, although this isn't our last podcast of the year actually, but
this is the penultimate
podcast. But we wanted to come up with something to sort of make it easy on all of us over the holidays to do something, and everyone's doing lists. But
we very easily
came up with 10 lies that people are either pushing or believe or somehow emulate. And they have definitely come to the forefront of our media this year.
And these are ones that we didn't go fishing for. These are ones
we sat down at lunch and went, 10, go. Right.
these are ones we write about all the time.
And we talk about all the time.
They are woven into our general critique of our politics and our media and our culture. And these are 10 things that just happen every day. It's like Italians in hell in Dante's Inferno.
Yes, they're just
Once you start looking for them, you see them everywhere. You start noticing, oh my God, they're doing it again. They're doing it again, and that's when you get annoyed and pissed off and jaded about politics, and you have to push through that.
And we also haven't made any plans as to how to go about this. So why don't you read the even ones?
Oh sure.
Well, no, I'll read the even ones so that you read the last one. Let's do that way.
Oh great! So you read the even ones, like all the good Star Trek movies. You read the good ones.
I'll read all the crap to ones.
Yeah.
Never Star Wars. I just want number 4. That's it. That's all I want to see. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And frankly, The Matrix, just the first one.
Yeah, the first 10 minutes of the first one.
Yeah.
And then I'm done.
Click. Got it. Got it. Liked it.
Loved it. Great. Best first 10 minutes of any movie ever. Yeah. I love it. Okay.
Yeah. Loved I got to see it on the IMAX when,
did you
WorldCon was in Chicago. By the way, just a little aside, World Science Fiction Convention is back in Chicago next year.
And you will be bringing a 14-year-old boy to that.
I almost certainly will. Because I don't think we're going to, Netroots in Rhode Island this year.
We can't. School's on still.
No.
And it's unfortunately. Everyone just needs to know that ahead of time. That's fine. Our listeners can just know that. School is still in session. Yeah. And they do, they have it in August and they have it in June and then they do it when they can do it. And that's, we totally understand that. But if school is in session,
issues.
We have issues. So that's just the way that is.
Yeah.
Yep, and we'll see you on the next time when there's an opportunity. We'd love to come back.
So. Yeah, but the World Science Fiction Convention is in Chicago. The last time I was there, I went, and I had some personal problems at the time, but I did get to see The Matrix on IMAX, and I did get to watch it get voted down in favor of Galaxy Quest, which just
hilarious.
Showed you how many octogenarians are voting for the science fiction game. I love that movie. That
was so
brilliant.
Funny. Yeah.
Matrix, I don't get all the chicks in leather and they're kicking and jumping. I don't understand that. So, needless to say, that was about the last science fiction convention I went to.
So, you're going to start again because now you've got a teenage boy in the house.
I do.
Who and wants who to knows? Discover all of this stuff, and it's new to him. It's great.
And it is possible that some authors I admire and who have come to know me over the last 10 years might be there as well.
That'd be great.
So who knows? All things are possible.
In other words, you're saying it might be deductible.
Exactly. Podcast expense. So I might be doing a fundraiser for this. Who knows?
Hey, you never know.
Send me to Beetlejuice.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. Well.
All right. So our 10 lies. And
10
number,
lies.
Number 10.
Number 10
is... It matters if you're wrong. Doesn't matter to Tom Friedman, especially this week.
No.
You want to tell us about what Tom Friedman did this week?
Tom Friedman and David Brooks as well wrote a column about Iraq. And it's just – it should be against the law for someone, for a neoconservative lying douchebag like Tom Friedman, who's also, let me repeat, for the 55th time, terrible writer. Just a technically – incompetent putter together of words. And of course, because he is friends with Arthur Sulzberg, he has Junior. He has a column in the New York Times forever. He will never, ever, ever, ever lose that job. It doesn't matter how wrong he is, no matter how much crap he writes. But he writes about a lot of things, some of which I don't disagree with, some of which I agree with.
Well, and he's also just incredibly well connected within that New York world.
He's rich. He's incredibly rich.
He's on the Pulitzer Committee. It's about who he knows.
It's all the influence money can buy.
Completely about who he knows.
Yes. And he was a very reliable conduit for information from the first Bush White House and got a lot of leaks in his time, and that's how he got himself a couple of Pulitzers. But as a writer about the world in which we live and the metaphors in which drive the world in which we live, he's just a terribly incompetent writer, and his opinions are just god awful.
And, oh, and his opinion this week, I want to focus on that.
Well, his opinion of Iraq was when the war started, he was a fervent supporter of it, and his predicate was we just need to go over there and pick a country, doesn't matter which one we go to, and he's on video saying this, and go tell them to suck on this.
Right.
Because there's this terrorism bubble over there. We need to go over there and burst this terrorism bubble. And it doesn't really matter which country we invade, etc.
The idea was to teach a lesson to the Arab world that we're in charge over there.
Yeah, and they can't get away with this shit.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. And he wrote a column very much like many of the other columns he has written ever since his little fantasy about playing Risk with real human beings blew up in his face and cost thousands of lives, hundreds of thousands of lives and trillions of dollars. He has now just rewritten his own history where he just wanted to go over there and create an opportunity for Iraqis and Americans to cooperate and collaborate and creating a democracy and blah, blah, blah. And it was and it really was about defeating Al-Qaeda over there. Or them defeating us over there. And that's really what the war was about. And it is impossible to read this column and not first assume it must be a parody because everybody knows what Tom Friedman's position was. This is not a secret. Everyone knows the arc that he has taken during the last 10 years where he has just lied about his position and lied about it and lied about it and people call him about it and people write thousands of blog posts about it and people flood the comment section of the New York Times about it. And it just doesn't affect him in any way. He just continues to lie about it, continues to go on the Charlie Rose show, continues to publish his crappy books, which will always get published because he has a million friends in the publishing industry, and continued going on book tours, and people ask him questions as if he had an opinion that was worth listening to. And it's just this weird – I've said this before. It's like watching the news from a foreign country where you just sit back and look at, like, this guy is by definition thoroughly discredited. He has no credibility on Iraq at all ever again. And here he is, not just talking about it, but making these wide sweeping statements about what he really meant and what the war was really about. And if we wait, you know, God knows 1,000 years, maybe he'll be right, maybe he'll be wrong. But we did pay a terribly high price, Blue Gal. He will admit that. And I want to know where the fuck he gets off using the word we. Mm-hmm. Because he didn't pay one goddamn cent. It didn't cost him anything. As I said in my post, it didn't even cost him the privilege of lying with impunity in the New York Times. It cost him nothing. So it doesn't matter. If you're in the club, it doesn't matter if you're wrong.
Because and that takes us always, to number nine.
Yeah, which
Why
is.
Why did you read that one?
It doesn't matter if you're right. It doesn't matter in the slightest if you're right. There are enough bloggers out there. And I count myself among them. I count people like Digby among them, you, Blue Gal, Batocchio, Atrios, lots and lots of bloggers out there, Jurassic Pork, Brilliant at Breakfast, First Draft, all of the people that I like, and I don't want to start listing names because I'll miss somebody. But there are just hundreds of bloggers out there, hundreds of liberals out there who were right about the Iraq War, who were right about the Patriot Act, who were right about torture, who were right about the Bush administration generally, who were right about the economy, who were right about the banking, radical banking deregulation, who were right about fucking Clinton, for God's sakes, who were right going back 25 years. And none of those people are taken seriously in the media. Tom Friedman is. David Brooks is deferred to and fawned over, and his opinion is sought, and he has many, many speaking engagements. I'm not making a special case of special pleading for anyone in that group to suddenly get a huge media contract, although I would certainly love one. What I'm saying is that there is a clear, bright, long trail of being right about lots of things that lots of people on the left share, and it doesn't make the slightest bit of difference. Mm-hmm. They are never invited into the Golden Circle. They're never brought on television. Their opinions are never sought out. David Gregory never pulls them into the camera range. They are never put up on the same pedestal as a Tom Friedman or a David Brooks. It just never happens. And the juxtaposition of you have people who are wrong all the time and are still at the pinnacle of American journalism, juxtaposed with people who are right all the time, who are shunned and called out as if they had been wrong all the time, that dynamic is permitted to go on decade after decade, tells you more about who's in charge of this country.
Yep.
And what the real agenda is than anything else you need to know. That's the real story. The real story is how utterly irrelevant it is about whether you're right or wrong. It depends on if you're in the club or you're not in the club. That's really all that matters when it comes to the American media.
Which takes us to number eight.
Yes.
The lie that the media is a disinterested observer and reporter in the political process.
Yeah.
And I just want to laugh at that and just say.
Three words.
Iowa. Ron Paul.
In Iowa.
Which is just, and that narrative has really changed this week. You know,
or Michelle Bachmann in Iowa.
Michelle Bachmann in Iowa.
Yeah, yeah.
They are writing a narrative, you know, the search for some miracle candidate that's not going to implode on them. And so that they can have a horse race.
Yes.
And it's not working.
And the thing about that is, Penn and Teller used to do this, they might still do it, is do magic tricks with like Lucite glass instead of cabinets.
And
so you can see how the trick is done.
Yeah.
And the thing that is so hilarious and insulting at the same time is that you have the Morning Joe people and the Mark Halperin people and the David Gregory people rewriting this narrative right in front of you. Mm-hmm. They just are naked about it. They are the people who ask Ron Paul, and this is something that Jon Stewart made sport of a couple of weeks ago, after he won, after he was going up in the polls, after he was actually overtaking other people, the question was, so would you support Mitt Romney? So would you get in bed with Mitt Romney? So once Mitt Romney beats you, are you going to come out in favor of him?
Well, and Newt Gingrich, too. So you won't endorse either Mitt Romney or Newt Gingrich.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious.
And like, that...
Okay,
and
now let's stop talking about Newt Gingrich. What do you think about Newt Gingrich?
Yeah. What do you think of Newt Gingrich? Isn't he awesome? And this is what... And I don't... everyone here knows, or if you're a new listener, let me make clear. Michelle Bachmann is some sort of spawn of the devil. Michelle Bachmann is the American id threw up, and it looks like Michelle Bachmann. But... she won the only election that's been held so far, an Iowa straw
poll. For what it's worth. But she did win.
She actually won. She actually won a totally rigged, totally
But it was a test of organization. It was a test of the will of people to come out and vote for her.
Yeah. And it was either – so here's the problem. Either it's completely irrelevant sham, in which case nobody should have reported on it, but they did. They had to pretend it was important because – if they don't gin up interest in politics, the network ratings collapse and they all have to go find real work. So they have to pretend like it's relevant and important in some way. But when she wins, they literally gave her 24 hours worth of coverage and then said, and now Rick Perry.
Yeah.
And they ran after Rick Perry like an army of nymphomaniacs after Justin Bieber. You know, it was just – or Ashton Kutcher, I should say. It was just embarrassing how much they were just, all right, let's get this bitch off the stage so we can go after the person we really want to get our fingers on, and that's Rick Perry.
Yep.
And it was just – and I really felt sorry for her because she, as much as I hate her and disagree with everything she says, had earned the right to be considered the front runner until people like David Gregory decided to physically pry it out of her hands and give it to someone who hadn't run for a fucking thing because that made for a better narrative.
Right.
Anyway, that's eight.
That's media eight. Your turn.
Seven. There is no governing elite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of don't even need to go very far with that one, but
no. No.
Yeah.
The degree to which one of the little things that came through that made us both laugh this week was listening to liberal talk radio and listening. This is a very small example. This is not the Trilateral Commission. This is no great insight, but it was a liberal talk radio host in the morning we were listening to talking about Clear Channel Radio and how Clear Channel Radio, yes, is a massive supporter of Rush Limbaugh and a massive supporter of right-wing talk stooges, but they also carry those shows. They also carry their shows. So let's not get all...
And they're the largest broadcaster of progressive talk, apparently, in the country.
Because progressive talk is trivial compared to what right-wing talk is.
Right.
But yeah, they carry more progressive talk than anybody else. But their big moneymaker is right-wing talk.
It's Rush.
Which they found, which this person on the radio revealed, for example, the reason they pimp Glenn Beck so hard is they own him.
Yeah.
They own the company that produces his show, so he's their product. And they were talking business, which doesn't really interest me much about radio because I'm never going to be in radio to the point where I would have to care about this stuff. But it really was this sort of very sensitive subject where – we want to bag on these people because they're evil, but let's not get crazy and start talking about boycotting or anything like that because we're all working for the same company.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it interesting. You know, that as much as I love Rachel Maddow, she works for the same company as David Gregory.
Yes.
And David Gregory is an absolute tool of the establishment, an absolute right-wing tool. And people who work in the same cubicle farm, let's say, as David Gregory, we'll never call him out. Never. They will go so far as to say some of our colleagues are doing this or some of our colleagues we disagree with. But at no point will anyone on MSNBC ever point a finger at David Gregory and say he's one of the problem children. He's one of the fucking traitors who shouldn't be on television, shouldn't have any place near a camera because he's controlling the narrative in a way that's destructive and dishonest. But they can't say that because their checks are all signed by the same people.
Right.
So, there absolutely is a media elite. Number six.
And there's a governing elite. I tweeted a amazing post showing the crony capitalism of Clinton and Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people, I mean, we all know how many people from Goldman Sachs go back and forth mm-hmm. to Treasury. But the pharmaceutical companies and the
yeah.
oil companies, and the, there's this level at which there's telecom. This club.
Telecom. Yeah. There really
is this level at which, you know, you are in this elite club of expert governor type uh-huh. people, that you're going to be the governing technocratic elite, either of a private company or in a government agency. And right. it's easily transferable from one to the other mm-hmm. with no sense of conflict of interest. And it's why we're so fucked in this country.
Oh,
You know, and it's Democrats. It's absolutely – and you can defend them, I suppose, by saying, well, you know, they are hiring people for their expertise. But come on. Not, yeah. You know, not to quote Eric Cantor, but come on.
Come on. You know what? That's fine. Hire them as experts on a consulting basis.
Yeah.
If you need – but – I'm sorry, but the role of the government is to be the traffic cop.
Exactly, and that's not happening.
And the people you and Monday, Wednesday, and Friday they're the traffic cop. Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday they're the speeders.
Yeah.
And that is simply untenable. Even if everyone involved had the very best of intentions, and was well, and really believed in the goodness or morality or whatever, you cannot have a system where the people wear a badge one day and oppose the badge the next. You can't do it. It doesn't work. And people who modify their behavior while they're in public office, knowing that they're going to leave that position and walk straight into a consulting gig or a senior executive position in the people they regulate, know that, who plan for that as if that's their retirement, because that is their retirement.
Yep.
Or the other way around, who work in the private sector in such a way that they eventually become – they're angling to become a traffic cop to get in to elective office or appointed office or an executive position in the government where they can change or modify policy and then leave again. And that just goes on all the time. And, it's easy to say it's got to stop, but – and it's easy to say it never will because it never has. But it's just so naked now.
Well, and it is so much contributing to the wealth inequity in this country.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
Yeah. Your access to power in this country, there is a strong, perhaps direct relationship between ultra wealthy people and the ability to influence government policy and government outcomes.
Yeah, period.
It's just it is fascism in the sense that it's corporatism. Mm-hmm. Corporations, when corporations run the government, that's what fascism is.
Yep.
When corporations have their own armies, that's what fascism is.
And what the reason it doesn't change is one thing and one thing only, the voters.
Yeah.
And that's what we have to start – that's where we have to start changing things is with the voters.
Yeah.
And number six is my
number
turn
six.
To read.
Yes.
The Republican Party's priority is family values.
Yeah.
And enough said. But it's I was looking at Politics, which is, you know, these stories are always funny. These total hypocrisy stories, and you find uh-huh. one once a week. You know, I did a Photoshop once of an accident sign at a plant. You know. This party has gone one day without a gay sex scandal.
But it's true.
But it's true. Mm-hmm. Help us beat our record. The safety of our party depends on you staying uh-huh. in the closet.
Uh-huh. Employees.
But I was looking at Politics, which is over at Gawker, and you know, this Mrs. Koch, who is in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And she 2 years ago, she co-authored a defense of marriage bill that failed. And so, of course, as Gawker says, the bill did not pass. And consequently, the institution of marriage was so degraded that Koch had no choice but to jump in bed with a hot hunk of a burning political staffer man love, thereby cheating on her husband.
Yep.
And so
she couldn't help it, really.
There was a man... one gay speaking on, I'm still reading from Gawker, one gay speaking on behalf of all gays. According to my knowledge of Glee, that's how they communicate, like a hive of bees. Issued an apology in the pages of the Twin Cities alt-weekly City Pages, and I won't read this, but it is really funny. It's like, we're so sorry that we forced you to cheat on your husband by yeah. wanting marriage and undermining the sanctity of marriage so that you had to go and commit adultery. Mm-hmm. So there's that one, and then you look at the sidebar of this same page, and it's family values politician bought gay sex shop wares with taxpayer money. And then meet Bill Johnson, the anti-gay GOPer, secretly donating sperm to lesbian couples in New Zealand. And you know, my gay friend Mark, I've told you about him before. He would say you have to say sperms, that's plural. He didn't just donate a sperm. He donated many sperms.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes, repeatedly.
Make sure Bill Johnson sets the record straight. He didn't donate sperm. He donated sperms.
And anyone named Johnson who's donating sperms.
Johnson is donating yeah. sperms. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. But, and you know, there are, you know, insert 50.
Oh, yeah. There's 50 more of these in the past. Since we started podcasting, there are 50 yeah. more of these.
Well, and so this, it's because, I mean, at some point, everybody who's watched politics for more than a year mm-hmm. or two steps back, has exactly the same moment, steps back and does exactly what Homer Simpson did in The Simpsons. Is everybody gay?
Yeah.
Is everyone on the GOP a closeted gay man? Really? At some point, or if not a closeted gay man, an adulterer.
Yeah.
Or likes fondling children, because it's just so fucking consistent, and it's yeah. always the same rigid, unblinking, frozen smile, vinyl haired, Bible thumping,
yeah.
holier than thou prick who rises to the top of that party and is undone by the fact that, oh yes, he likes little boys.
Well,
oh,
but,
yes,
and, he's but got as a I said, I said in a post a long time ago, and I'm not going to go back and get any links for this episode because it's Christmas, so go look right. this up yourself at my own blog.
Deal.
But I wrote a post a couple of years ago about how the Republican Party will always win on this issue with a certain segment of Southern conservative voter, because yes. there is always another one.
Yes.
They have a bottomless pit of helmet-haired, church-going family men, white men,
uh-huh.
who will stand up and say family values because they haven't let their dick out of their pants yet.
Or gotten caught at it.
Or gotten caught at it yet. And let's yeah. not forget, too, that Vitter is still in the Senate.
Yes, he is.
Because, yep. you know, they're so willing to forgive. He just made a mistake.
Yep. Yep.
So...
And that's the key to it.
Okay if you're a Republican.
It has nothing – exactly. EOKR. EOKR yeah. is still in effect. It will always be in effect with the GOP.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm sure everyone experiences if you do this, talking to conservative friends,
yeah.
is they just have this ablative shielding that deflects facts by the metric ton. It doesn't matter that they're lied to. It doesn't matter that you can hold up 1,000 examples of them being lied to. Look, this guy just shit in your head for the 1,000th time. Why do you keep listening to them? And they have been – I was thinking tooling around today because we didn't have a formal pregame. But the perfect analogy for this, speaking of movies that you should be watching right now, is Failsafe. Which is a wonderful movie from the 60s about an accidental nuclear exchange between the United States and the Soviet Union. And it stars Walter Matthau as Bill Kristol, the hyper-fanatical neoconservative, nuke them now. That's the solution to our problems. Sneak attack is perfectly acceptable because they're not really human beings. It's totally fucking Bill Kristol. And Henry Fonda is, of course, the perfect president. But there's this moment in the movie. This is about an accidental attack against the Soviet Union launched by the United States, where a bomber wing of the United States Air Force gets a false message to attack. And they go in, and precipitating this gross international crisis. And the Russians are jamming them. We can't get through to our own planes to tell them that this is a drill. This is not an actual attack. And by the time the radio message reaches the plane, they've passed what's called their fail-safe point. They've passed the point of no recall. And there's this really touching and scary scene with the president of the United States on the phone with the leader of the bomber group saying, "God damn it, this is the president of the United States. There is no attack. You need to turn around now. You're about to do something horrible." And the leader of the bomber wing says, "But Mr. President, you're ordering me to do something you specifically ordered me not to do." Yeah. And the right wing had been trained, like that bomber group, to ignore every piece of information that doesn't come from Rush Limbaugh's ass. So it literally doesn't matter. They are no longer functioning humans in this sense. They have been trained so thoroughly to ignore anything that comes out of the New York Times, the Washington Post, even though those publications are horribly flawed. Anybody who doesn't reflect back to them their paranoid, bigoted fantasies about the America that they wish existed or hope exists or nostalgically believe existed once upon a time, anybody who doesn't reflect their own bigotry back to them is automatically not to be trusted. So it doesn't matter how many times you prove to your conservative friends they're being lied to because you're a liberal.
Well, and the big problem is that they've now elected a good chunk of those to the U.S. House.
Yes. And they are fanatics.
As writers have written to us and said, you know, we used to make those people wear shoes and sit in the corner and be quiet. Yeah. And now they've elected them to the House.
And that's why it doesn't matter that every week there's a new Republican sex scandal.
Yeah.
Because as long as the next Pez coming out of the Pez dispenser holds a Bible, looks righteous, has a clean haircut, is clean shaven, and looks like a good white American Christian man, you know, directly
going to
out
restrict
of the
abortion rights.
Who will restrict abortion rights and go beat that Kenyan usurper who stole the White House from them good Christians. As long as he says the right lies and the right
out.
Order.
Yeah, those kind of things, yeah.
They will follow him anywhere, and he will fail, but it will never occur to them that their ideology is the thing that's to blame, and that their ideology is the thing that keeps causing these freaks and these perverts and these monsters to be sort of puked up out of their subconscious and onto the political stage. They are sick. They are mentally ill. They're selectively lobotomized in a way that prevents them from receiving any information that conflicts with their pre-existing and deeply depraved worldview. So they're gonna keep – so stop being surprised. This is not telling you anything you don't already know. But we need to stop being astounded every time they fall for the next bald-faced liar. Because of course they will. That's how they've been programmed. They can't help it. That's what they've been ordered to do by General Rush Limbaugh and Colonel Sean Hannity. And they're not gonna deviate from that program, because if they do, they see what happens. When you start doubting, like any good fundamentalist, the great threat is doubt. The thing you are never allowed to do as a fundamentalist is doubt. You should never doubt. Don't doubt the book. Because the minute you start doubting, it all unravels and falls apart. And then there's nothing but chaos. There's nothing to believe in.
Have you noticed that the little pool of – they aren't progressives, but people who should know better, who have skirted around the edge of endorsing Ron Paul are all men?
Yeah.
I just want to say that.
Yeah.
Because the misogyny of Paul came out way before the racism of Paul.
Mm-hmm. And Paul also appeals to, and I'm going to cop to being this way when I was a post-adolescent.
Oh, yeah.
Paul appeals to a certain obsessive, compulsive, rules-obsessed type of young man who wants to understand a logical structure to the world and wants and is so in love with – there's a book called Gödel, Escher, Bach, which was very popular in the 70s and 80s, which was music, mathematics, and art. But it was about perfect systems and the way that systems can always – you can always – sort of calculate your way outside of the system. There is no such thing as a perfect system. You can always find your way out of it. libertarians, of whom I sort of flirted before I hit puberty, as I used to say, and the libertarians I've known love the idea of a totalizing, perfect, abstract system, the same way a pure communist would wants to have that system in place, to the detriment of human nature. Mm-hmm. They just don't accept the fact human nature is incompatible with their ideology, and their approach to the problem is the same thing as a dedicated communist, which is, we'll change human nature.
Yeah.
And so, and there's a certain kind of guy who likes science fiction, especially military science fiction, and is in love with the idea of a completely self-sufficient, handsome, bold, world-shaking hero who doesn't let the man hold him down or the conventional world defeat him, and who conquers space, time, woman, whatever it is. And yeah, it's a very guy thing. But it depends on – and the flip side of that is has contempt for anyone who is perceived of as weak. It's almost that Leopold and Loeb kind of thing, you know, where I'm superior to you, therefore I get to kill you.
Yeah.
And it's that particular kind of borderline psychosis that a lot of people find – a lot of people who are on that line find very appealing about libertarianism, because it explains the world.
Yep.
And it separates the world into those who are fit to survive, those who are fit to hang out. I run into lots of these people in Mensa.
Yeah.
Here's a group, you know, there's a group that's fit to survive who should govern because they're smarter than everybody else, and everyone else should either fall in line or die. And that's, you know, that's
how convenient that you're in the top 2% of the intelligence testing motif. Yeah,
isn't it weird? And we had a hilarious.
I'm allowed to talk smack about Mensa, also, by the way.
Oh sure. Well, and we had one of.
I have my Mensa membership card right above my kitchen sink.
Yes.
Taped to the cabinet.
At eye level.
At eye level to show that while I'm washing dishes.
Well, and one of the kids very calmly explained the other day why kids should govern everything.
Oh, yeah. Like, was it the boy?
Yeah, it was the boy.
Yeah, of course it was.
And every group thinks that if you're – whatever group you're a member of –
kids be in charge. Yeah.
Exactly.
I've heard him say that.
Yeah. So – but libertarianism is a very seductive ideology in that it essentially says we need to clean out – all the impure, all the weak, all the people who can't hack it in our perfect, competitive, hyper-intelligent, job-creating John Galt world. And if you happen to be in a group that is traditionally underserved or oppressed or put upon, they have nothing but contempt for you.
Yeah.
And those groups tend to be poor people, women and minorities. And that lines up very nicely with the John Birch Society, very nicely with the aggrieved white male heart of the GOP. They call it different things. That's why I don't find it difficult to believe at all that Ron Paul strongly embraced incredibly racist ideas. Because once you go down that road, why not go a bit further? Once you believe the government has no business ending slavery.
Yes.
Or intervening in states to relieve the oppression of a minority by a majority. Why? Once you start down that road, then you start hating people who are in that minority.
Yeah.
You start hating them as if they are my. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Okay, my Skype just told me no microphone detected, which is it's a polite way of saying, shut the fuck up, man, and move on. We get it already. Libertarians are crazy. Let's go on to number five.
All right.
Ready?
Number five is centrism.
Centrism. Say it with me now. Centrism.
Centrism. And I think that's related to number four, if you don't mind.
No, please. Go ahead.
Which is most Americans are independents.
No.
And the answer to that is no, they're not. A lot of Americans are not interested in politics or are afraid to discuss it or are afraid of conflict generally in their lives. And that's true. Or they're preoccupied with, you know, Real Housewives or something else.
Yeah.
But most Americans are not independents when it comes down to real issues that affect them.
No.
like Social Security and Medicare. They're not independents.
At all. No. And people, you know, there are genuine independents who don't line up with anybody, and I respect that.
We've heard from some of them, and they've been really intelligent and really had their political act together in terms of what they really believe. And one of the things they don't believe in is the party system, and I get that.
Uh-huh. And if we could change that.
Hey, more power to you. Yeah.
If it weren't a spoil system, if it weren't baked into the cake that you have a spoil system, and one side wins means one side takes all, that'd be fine. But that's not the system we actually, have.
Yeah.
I think there's also built into that independent number. One of my pet peeves about polls, for example, because let's face it, a whole lot of political TV consists of guys in suits reading you poll numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's really it. And which tell you nothing. There's no context given. There's no information imparted other than today a snapshot of some subsection of the population looks like this. I don't give a shit about that.
It gets really bad when the poll, like the poll that came out today, earlier today, was who do you blame for the tax debacle? And it was 8% Obama. Yeah. And 92% Boehner. When polls are like that, and it's the Washington Post taking the poll,
it means something.
It means something.
Yeah.
But otherwise,
There are way too many polls, for example, that essentially just a right track, wrong track poll.
Yeah.
Do you think Barack Obama is doing a good job?
Yeah.
Yes or no? Oh, only 41%? That's a very bad number, Jim. Most presidents are up around 52 or 48 at least at this time. Well, here's the problem with that number. Here's always the problem with that number. And here's always the problem with the polls. I really would like to see underneath that poll number, any poll number, an explanation of what the hell you're talking about.
Yep.
Was that a poll of actual voters or of Americans in general? In which case, I don't care what the poll is because half those people aren't going to vote anyway. Mm-hmm. And if it's a poll of approval or disapproval, especially of Barack Obama, tell me how many of those people disapprove of him because they're Republicans and hate everything he stands for, and how many of them are Democrats or liberals or independents who are pissed off because he disappointed them on the Patriot Act, disappointed them on
Gitmo,
torture,
absolutely.
Disappointed them on Gitmo, and think he's not liberal enough.
Mm-hmm.
Or
how many of them don't think he's doing a good job because they're out of work right now, period.
Exactly.
And they may go ahead and vote for him anyway, but they're pissed, and
they're
rightly
pissed.
So.
Uh-huh. Or they don't think the stimulus was near big enough.
Big enough, yeah.
Or they think, how the fuck did you cave to these people
last year? Yep.
All of which I agree with.
Why aren't you pushing harder for me? You know, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to ask the president at this point.
But that is a much more nuanced and interesting discussion than our media wants to have. It is just good job, bad job.
Yeah.
No. That's where the myth of the independence comes in.
Mm-hmm.
The independence is a polyglot category made up of all kinds of people who have either very distinct, well-thought-out positions or crazy-ass positions or internally contradictory positions or mutually exclusive positions. But to lump them all together and treat them as a monolith and say independents believe this or that is as bad as – and I just want to shoot people on television, especially Republicans, although the left is pretty bad at this too, who every fucking sentence begins with the American people believe.
Yeah.
The American people think. The American people want. And I just think
Esquire says real men never say those words in a row.
I don't. And I'll tell you, if we just had shock collars on these people and could collectively put 10,000 volts into their neck every time they say something, every time some Republican freshman teabagger from Sister Fuck Arkansas stands up and says, the American people do not want us to go
a
slim majority of the inbred hillbillies who voted you into office and who will vote you
in your district
believe
their house
that
members
you should be up believe
turned
it's a
out in a midterm election to vote you into office because they were pissed.
And they think
that
goddamn Kenyan usurper Negro needs to go, and his sassy wife too. Yeah. Those people are absolutely down with your program.
Yep.
But you don't speak for the American people at all. You speak for a remnant of the Confederacy for which you should be horribly embarrassed. The fact that you're proud of it is just pathetic.
Yep.
So shut the fuck up
with
the
American people. Number three. Read me number three.
Number three. Number three. There is a free market. And abandonment.
Period.
Period.
There's a free market.
There is no free lunch, people, and there is no free market. Never has been, never will be.
But in particular, to talk about what has happened in the past decade with the abandonment of the free market by big business.
Any pretense of a free market.
Any pretense that they are not stacking government and government spending in their favor to the expense of everything else.
Yeah.
And when the Bank of America president says, we have a right to make a profit.
Mm-hmm.
He's not saying we have a right to try to make a profit. We have a right to – it's this too big to fail mentality. Free markets means you can go out and try to make a profit. You can go out and try to win in the capitalist game.
Right.
But you can also lose big. And these too big to fail institutions have erased that.
Right.
So,
and that's
a problem. That's a real problem.
And that is a completely logical outcome to a – laissez-faire capitalist system where some people would get large enough and powerful enough to control the government and therefore set the rules in such a way that they always win. That's just why you don't want to have a completely free market laissez-faire system running amok in your fucking country. That's why you need a government that is large enough to contain the excesses
just
of the free market.
Tell them no. You don't get to pollute the air.
No,
period.
Because they are amoral machines designed to make money. That's what they're – I'm not saying that's good or bad. That's what they do. And they will continue to make profit at the expense of everything around them, air, water, future generations, and the democratic government that is supposed to protect us all. They will destroy every one of those things.
And the ideal system – we won't always get to the ideal system, but the ideal system is a government large enough to say
no,
you can't do it that way all the time, because the public interest has more to do, has a higher calling than your profit margin.
And those experts that can speak knowledgeably about climate science and economics and what fracking really is causing to have happen in the ground, and can speak with expert knowledge about how to set up public welfare policies in a way that really benefits and protects people when they need it the most, those experts should A, be paid a handsome salary by you and I because they're doing God's work, and B, should not be allowed to go across the street the minute they quit their government job and go to work for companies that they just got done regulating. Regulation is the thing the governments do. Sometimes we regulate things with guns. And we call those wars.
We see that happening in the telecom industry, in the oil industry, and everywhere else. And also experts who know something about the impact of fracking on the geology of this planet should have a bigger microphone than David Brooks and his stock portfolio.
Yeah.
And
or
they
just
don't.
As big.
Yeah.
I don't want a government that can beat up the market, beat the market into doing what the government says it should do.
I don't
want that. I like the idea of intelligent people being able to make a profit by competing in a free market, winning and losing, and coming up with a better mousetrap for me to buy or whatnot. But I do not want the government so large that it can force the private sector into becoming government employees.
Okay.
And I don't want a private sector so large that it can control the government.
Yep. Yep.
That balance is
and that balance is broken right now, and we've got to fix it.
Broken.
Yep.
Shall we?
Number two. Voting is a privilege, not a right.
Yeah.
And wasn't there someone out there who said people fought and died in the civil rights movement to vote? We don't want to make it easy on them.
Yeah.
We don't want to make it easy to vote. People fought and died for that right. Wait a minute. You're really unclear on the concept, dude. Oh, man.
Let's face it, every day, every one of us passes at least a half a dozen people that we pray to God don't vote.
I pray to God they don't reproduce.
Yeah. I'll go there. Right there. Yep. Please don't pass your debased weirdo genes on to any more generations. And while you're remaining celibate, please don't vote. For God's sake, please don't vote.
Just put some Norplant in there. That's all. That's all I'm asking.
Uh-huh. However, the idea that we are setting up a system where you have to argue in favor of extending the franchise to people as if it's a privilege is just nauseating. And it's always been that way. But in the last, between 1964 and 1985, 90, I don't know when, we seem to have sort of settled that.
Yeah, I thought so.
You get to vote. And we should make it easier. We should make it ever easier for people who are overseas to vote. Yeah. We should make it easier to register and then to vote. We should make the whole thing just easier. And that's where people, I think people romanticize the idea of internet voting or electronic voting until they notice that, wait a minute, that means no paper trail.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe this isn't such a good idea. Maybe the quaint idea of an actual physical paper record is something we should keep.
Well, the idea that you can mail out tax returns to people and you can mail out Social Security cards to people, but you can't mail ballots to people, it's just – it's heinous. You can – it's been done. It's been done in Oregon for years.
Yeah.
So it makes no sense.
And I really – this is where I won't get trapped into an argument about voter fraud.
No.
Because there is no voter fraud.
Yeah. Screw it.
Voter fraud is such a is 0.0001% of our electoral problems, and anybody who goes to voter fraud first, not election fraud,
no, that's
not
different.
Voter suppression.
We're not talking about the riots that happened in Broward County when all the what did they call those, the Wall Street? No, what were they called?
The pinstripe
riots. Is that what they were called?
Where they imported a bunch of Republicans to pretend
from
riot.
D.C. Yeah,
no. We're not talking about election fraud, which is where you have wide scale, which is what Catherine Harris did in Florida, wide scale disenfranchisement of legal voters to suppress the vote. The idea that you have 30 voting machines in the white districts and 3 in the black districts. The idea that you get ex-felons off the rolls a few days before the election and you sort of accidentally pick up 20, 30, 40,000 completely
innocent
people.
It's called the Brooks Brothers riot.
Thank you.
Went and looked that up.
I was close. I'll go with pinstripe. I'll go with pinstripe, Alex. the judges will allow that. No, that's election fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Diebold was election fraud. Wasn't his election fraud. Voter fraud is where you have to show up at the polls. You have to register under a false name, show up at the polls with that same false name, and vote under that false name. Because Mickey Mouse would do something like that, and nobody would catch it. Anybody who goes straight to voter fraud as the problem that needs to be solved, even though every single person who takes a hit of truth serum on the right will admit there really isn't any problem, even though it's gone to the Supreme Court, anybody who goes straight to voter fraud is a bigot. Because the only excuse for voter to make voting harder is that you don't want the people most likely to come out and vote, the marginal voters, to vote. And they're the ones almost always older, poorer, and darker that Republicans like to see in their electorate. And so the entire mechanism of making voting harder is designed to keep those people from voting. For no other reason than to influence the outcome of elections. It has nothing to do with pervasive voter fraud. It has nothing to do with protection of the franchise. It has nothing to do with civil rights other than it's antithetical to it. And people who line up on that side are either completely brainwashed and abysmally ignorant, or they're fucking racist.
Yeah.
There's no third answer to that question, because there is no problem. This doesn't solve anything other than the fact that if voting were fair in this country, Republicans would lose every fucking election.
And let's end with number one, because that's completely related to what you're saying.
Number one, voting doesn't matter. Yep.
And if voting didn't matter, the GOP wouldn't be working so hard to make you stop doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Matters a lot.
It matters enormously. It's everything, and it's what you have left.
It's all we have left sometimes.
It's what you have left. And I'm afraid at the end of the day, as much as I might agree with people on 99% of every other issue, if your final argument to me is give up, forget about it, walk away, it's, you know, the odds are too great, the people arrayed against us have too much power, we're small, they're large, we can't win. No, I'm sorry. I was watching earlier this evening on the Filthy Liberal television was Melissa Harris Perry do a shtick on with the boy, with the 13-year-old boy.
With our kid, yeah.
Our kid. Doing a shtick on what would World War II look like if it reported through a modern lens with Twitter and with live feed and with chyrons at the bottom of the screen.
He must have loved that.
He loved it. It was totally relatable. We had a really good conversation about World War II, and it took place in 1940, which was one of the darkest years in World War II because Britain was all alone, getting bombed.
That's also the year his dad was born. So,
That's a very
big deal to him. Yeah.
But I'm sorry, the people who were facing down the Blitzkrieg during the Battle of Britain had it harder than you do.
Yep.
And
lots of people in this world today have it harder than we do.
They face longer odds.
Yeah.
And granted, I think as an American, we have a special responsibility to be better than everyone else because we are more privileged, we're luckier, we're wealthier, we have more going for us. And to whom great power is given.
Well, as long as that's not used as a way of quelling dissent, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
You know, we're the most blessed country in the world, et cetera, et cetera. But then that also boils down to stop complaining, and that's not where I'm at.
No. Actually, what I'm trying to angle at is more of the Martin Luther King sentiment of the genius of simply holding the American government and the American culture to account for its own words.
Yep.
Here is what you promised you would do. Here is what you said you were about. You said you wrote.
You're about equality. Document. Yeah, you're about equality.
Read the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
Read the Federalist Papers. Read the Constitution. You said this was what you believed.
Mm-hmm.
All we're asking.
All
is
men are created equal. Yeah.
And that's very powerful.
Yep.
And for all of the horrible sins and crimes committed by the founders. They did commit to paper a contract, a promise that we can continue to turn to and continue to say, we're going to hold you to this. And you can yell at us and you can call us names and you can call us un-American and you can ignore us and you can call us dirty hippies, but we're not going to stop every time you step out of line, every time. And this applies to Barack Hussein Obama and the crazy idea that you should ever be able to lock up an American citizen forever without a trial. Every bit as much as it applies to George W. Bush.
Yep.
We're not going to stop insisting that you live up to the best this country has to offer and quit trying to pander to the worst this country has to offer. And that's what being a liberal is, really.
And
it's insisting that we live up to being Americans rather than being lived down to it.
I still don't know what that bill says or what it's really about.
I don't either.
I'm not
going to. This is me off.
Okay. All right. I want to end our podcast tonight with a message I got on Facebook that was very heartening to me, and it relates to the whole gay rights issue. It's from a Facebook listener, and he writes, I just want to say the comment made by Driftglass in episode 106 about gay conservative Republicans hit home real hard. His honesty about the subject is a witness of the truth of the matter. Hearing his words, unfortunately, did not do me any good, since it brought loads of harsh memories and feelings. Or maybe they did do me good. They remind me that I shouldn't have to be miserable every minute of every day wondering what the hell was wrong with me. They remind me of the fear I felt constantly if my church found out. I feared they would counsel my mother to use tough love and kick me to the curb like they did my brother.
Oh, man.
His words remind me of the days and nights I spent literally on my hands and knees crying and asking God what was wrong with me and how can I squelch these feelings. I endured this for 20 years until I couldn't take it anymore. I, at the age of 28, sat Pastor George down and told him that I could not live this miserable life of hypocrisy. That's what it is, hypocrisy. One cannot be a gay conservative Republican. Not unless one is willing to lie to themselves and be miserable. Ugh, I wish my skills as a writer were developed well enough to tell this story with persuasive eloquence. Hey, you're doing just fine, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he says, and I'm not giving any names here at all. I just think that's best. I am grateful for the fire you have lit in my heart. I would love to watch your show on MSNBC or Current.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas to you and your precious family. Thank you for writing that. We appreciate it so much. And as we said earlier in the podcast, your statement, one cannot be a gay conservative Republican unless they all are. Yeah. That's the thing.
Unless this is the greatest performance art project in history.
Oh, man.
Where it's all a big act. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the third act, they will all reveal themselves as having, but that's not true. They're prisoners. Mm-hmm. They're trapped in this amber. They're trapped in this system. And they work for the people who want to destroy them. And that's just tragic. And if it were only themselves and their side of the country they were pulling down, I would say that's just incredibly sad.
Yeah.
But we're all chained together. We're all stuck together.
And I still wonder about Victoria Jackson from time to time, whether it isn't some sort of humongous performance on art on her part that she's doing this. But
yeah,
it turns out several people have told me, no, she really believes the stuff she's saying. So,
and at the end of the day, I care about what you do.
Yeah.
Not what you say, not how well you say it. What do you do?
Well, he said it very well. So yes. Thank you for that message. We appreciate it very much.
Yeah.
And we appreciate all of you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We will be here next week. We have a free app. And when you're on the app and you click on exclusive content, I think it is, there's a button there that says rate this app. We wish you would do that, those of you that have bought the app. It helps us out. And we appreciate you so much, those of you that are listening on your Apple product and have bought the app. Thank you so much for that. We have a website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can listen for free with no download and no registration. And we also want to do a special shout-out to everyone who's catching up with their podcast listening, because we're seeing it in our stats that, we were down a little last week, and then it ticks up and it ticks up and it ticks up. And we know that you are, during the holiday season, listening back to the past three episodes or so. And we're grateful that you stick with us in that way. Thank you.
We see you when you're sleeping. We know when you're awake, so to speak.
Oh. We are on Facebook. And there is a link to our Facebook page at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. If you can like us on Facebook, and you can also friend me, Francis Langham, on Facebook. And I'll be glad to friend you back. We're on iTunes. And again, don't forget we have the Professional Left app at the iTunes store as well. You can contribute to the podcast. And thank you so much to those people who have made one-time donations for the holidays and those of you that have signed up to give $5 or $10 a month on the podcast website. We're very grateful to those of you who are giving consistent support to our podcast work. It means a lot to us. Thank you. We have an email address. It's proleftpodcast@gmail.com. That comes to both of us.
Uh-huh.
Feel free to write us, and be aware that if you write us at that address or on Facebook or wherever, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise.
Thank you. And I want to take executive privilege here and say I have been a terrible correspondent for about the last 2 or 3 weeks.
I wonder if we could have anything to do with the fact this is your first Christmas with three kids.
Well, there's that.
You're a new dad. I mean, you have to kind of this has been a big adjustment. It's been a happy adjustment, but I think I think you underestimate how big a time vacuum three children are. So just be aware.
I enjoy them thoroughly, and I got to say I'm
– They enjoy you too. So
apparently this is one of those occasions where it's really true. This is a job I was meant to do.
Yes, it is.
Fatherhood definitely agrees with me, and I appear to be reasonably good at it.
You are.
And maybe you just have to wait 50 years to be patient enough to to do it. I had to wait that long to be that patient.
I
know lots of people who are in their 20s and 30s who are plenty patient and very good dads. But there's something about writing in the last couple of months that's just been a pull and an anchor. And my correspondence has suffered, and I've tried to keep up with my posts because I really feel it's a writer's job, whether you like it or not, whether you're feeling up to it or not, to write every day. But one of the areas that has suffered is my correspondence, and it is my intention, my strong intention, to catch up with that over the next few days. So my apologies to everyone who's written to me, made contributions, dropped me a note or a line. I'll get back to you very shortly. It's me, man. It's not you. It's me. I just wanted to say that. So Blue Gal, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, the Internet Kitties have one wish this Christmas Eve. They want that highly collectible Donald Trump Herman Cain 2012 bling.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovin'. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2011, Dripglass Blue Gal Podcast.
I was just over at Cafe Press, and they actually do have Herman Cain for President. Common sense, conservatism, ornaments. I want a Herman Cain ornament that has a little light-up thing on it that says, blame yourself!